I'd like to just set the scene first. I don't do this. I don't come to the front and speak, whether it be in church or whether it be even at work. I'm all right for one to twos or sort of half a dozen at work, but I don't do this. It's way outside my comfort zone, trust me. That's for sure. I thought this evening I might even take my contact lenses out so that I couldn't see and you were a little blurred. And I was worried that I might not get a set of tomatoes heading my way, so I thought maybe that's not. So why have I put myself in front of a hostile audience here this evening? Well, after what happened to me in 2019, I felt compelled to tell my story, or to tell those testimonies we like to call it. Actually, that's not strictly true. I don't feel compelled. I actually want to tell you my story. I'm going to get a bit ahead of myself. I want to take you back in time a few years, first of all. I had an excellent upbringing. My parents, who are here tonight, I'm pleased to say, taught me what was right and wrong, showed me how to respect people, and I never wanted for anything. Actually, that's not quite strictly true. I did want for something. I always wanted a dog. Something we rectified later in life. I may do with two goldfish instead. Not quite the same thing, but I still liked them. When I went to secondary school, it was at a very interesting time. Now, as on the board of governors for one academy trust for a secondary school, I was astonished to hear the other week, or a few months ago now, that they actually have buddies for primary school children who go to the secondary school. So they feel a little bit comfortable, they've got somebody to turn to. I never had anything like that, and I found it was quite a traumatic time going to secondary school in this big school with loads of other people, loads of kids up to 16, and I was there only 11, 12 years old. That was back in 1977, so I'll say, doing the maths, that means I'm now 55. One of the things I had at that school was, I was never physically bullied, but I did have to face some verbal bullying. And it was at that time I probably had the first thought of God. And I started to pray on an evening that the bullies would leave me alone. And would you believe it? They did. Now, some people in the street who don't know God would say, oh, that's just an ordinary thing, you wouldn't, that's just kind of thing that happens. But when things keep happening, you start thinking, is this really just coincidence? Or is there something more to it? I've always looked for the extraordinary in God, to see him do fantastic things. So I thought no more about God. And I went to secondary school, did quite well with O-levels and A-levels. And then I started my first job in 1984 at the DHSS, Department of Health and Social Security. And that's during that time I met the love of my life. And then a bit later, I met Jan. Well, that's why I spectated your joke, wouldn't I? Jan knows I'm joking. You do know I'm joking. I think I'm in trouble tonight. Anyway, we started going out in 1987, and we married in 89. Now, it was DHSS in Dudley, Cavendish House. Many of you know it's at the top of the hill. And we often joke about the fact that Cavendish House actually resembles the state of our marriage. The beginning, it was nice, bright and shiny. If you see it now, it's crumbling, wreck, and it's just about standing. Jan knows I'm joking about that one, because we joke about that quite regularly. In 1988, I came to know God. Nothing spectacular, just a gradual conviction that having seen the way Jan and the family were, and everyone here, some of you are still here today, it just brought me to a realisation that God was real and I wanted him in my life. But living as God wants you to do is not always easy to do. I've been waiting 25 years to use this golfing metaphor. And some of you who like play golf or who watch advanced golf will understand what I mean by this. Playing golf is not easy. Living as God wants you to do is not always easy. You can stand on the tee of a hole with the hole laid out before you, with a load of hazards in front of you. You can see the bunkers ahead of you. You can sometimes see ditches and water and trees and out of bounds. And your inclination is to try and hammer that ball as hard as you can down that hole. And if you try doing that, as the golfers amongst us will tell you, you often get it wrong. If you're like me, I'm going left and right and out of bounds. If you're like my brother-in-law, Dave, he goes for the trees. See the sniggers from the back, he knows what I'm talking about. So playing golf takes a lot of discipline. To get the ball where you want it, 200, 250 yards plus down the fairway, or if you're my golfing partner, Adam, it's 300 yards down the fairway. It takes a lot of discipline. And I think living with God takes discipline. It's easy to go off track and lose your way. The next thing to talk about really is the fact that many or most of you will know that we have no children. In the mid-90s, that we were told that was highly unlikely. So you build up a kind of defence mechanism there to deal with that. And whilst it's not easy, life goes on and you accept it, we weren't the only ones who were in that situation. The back end of 96 into 97, we decided we wanted to move house and we'd set our hearts on a new housing estate, which was Burton Road Hospital redevelopment, now opposite Bishop Miller School. And I spotted a house that we really quite liked. Problem is, when we went to the building society, they said, no, you can't afford that on the multiples of your income. Well, we were quite upset about that. We were really hoping for this house. And we spoke to Tim Fellows. And if you know Tim Fellows, you'll know that he's in the finance world. And he said, leave it with me. I know the building society manager. And lo and behold, the day or so later, and he came back and says, we can get you that mortgage with the building society. Is that God of the ordinary, coincidence, or the extraordinary? I'll leave you to ponder that for a while. The next thing that happened was we moved in back into February 1997. And within a week, Jan came down with a serious illness. And it was a serious illness. It was in relation to a problem with gallbladder, which had produced loads of little gallstones like apple seeds that has caused some damage in the bile duct, and basically she was ill for the best part of a year. And at one point we rushed her into hospital and we were not sure whether she was going to come out. In fact, the consultant said to us, there are people who have come into this hospital in a better state than you and have not come out. Now, we believe God answers a lot of prayer there, and that was a definite extraordinary event in our lives, and she came through it, and she's not suffered any implications or repercussions of that since, even though the consultants at the time said she could, but she didn't. Move on a little bit now, and we move to something that came completely out of the blue. In early 2008, Jan told me she was pregnant. Now, we were in our mid-40s, so as you can imagine, that was really a bolt from the blue and such a surprise. God of the extraordinary? Well, most definitely. But then to our bitter disappointments, before the first scan, she lost the baby. We were devastated. But you know what? I still thought, well, actually, it's happened once, maybe it can happen a second time. September of that year, it happened a second time. She lost it again. At that point, you really start asking questions. Why, oh why, did God let that happen? Why didn't he, weren't we just left to be alone and cope with what we had? You have people who can't have children. That's bad news. You have people who have miscarriages all the time. That is very disturbing and upsetting. But I don't think I've come across anybody who has been in a situation where we've got to mid-40s, told we wouldn't have any children, expected to not have any children, and then lost both of them. I've not heard anybody like that. And even now, the pain still hurts. It still digs, and you ask why. We struggle to come to certain services, to Mother's Day, Father's Day, because the pain is there. If you come to certain services, or when the kids come from downstairs to from Sunday school to sing to us, you look at the people around here and you look at the delight in people's faces, the joy, because they think about their own children, or for younger women, it's what they might have. We had that feeling for a short period of time, and we lost it. So that's why we never come to those kind of services, because it still sticks with us now. You ask, what is the reason for it? Well, sometimes, you know, God's got a bigger picture. Sometimes God's got a bigger picture, I'll say that once again. And you don't know the reason why. You don't understand the reasons why. But you either, some people said to us, don't get bitter. I was never bitter. I was disappointed because I knew God could do it. We see so many people who come here and testify, and they start talking a bit about miscarriages, and I know exactly where they're going, because it always ends up great, and the story and God works in it. But it didn't work for us. But I wasn't bitter, I was disappointed, because I knew God could do it and hadn't done it for us. It's interesting, bigger picture. If you look at the this week's month's bulletin, towards the back, there is an article in there about 9/11. Have a read of it. That person saw the bigger picture. We're still waiting. One of the things we did between our two miscarriages is we decided to have a dog. And we had a puppy, Cocker Spaniel. Now, the ones with the big floppy ears. Now, maybe this is just me, but I think and believe that God sometimes brings and uses animals, and as well as bringing people into your path. I think that's what happened with Oscar. He was a real character. Anybody who knows him knows he was a real character. And he brought a lot of joy and comfort to us over this period of time. A lot of joy and comfort. And we sometimes say, we don't know where we would have been without him. When I would come back from work, he would be there at the door. He liked to snuggle his head into my neck and give me a welcome. And do so many things that you just would not believe. But he meant a lot to us at that time. Everybody knew about one thing about Oscar. He had a side to him that demonstrated he was still a wild animal, if you like. There are many of us who can experience when we upset him and he nipped us. But over and above that, he meant a heck of a lot to us. Moving towards the end of the millennium, 1999 probably, we considered adoption as an alternative to not having any family, but that didn't work. The whole process was incredibly intrusive and incredibly bureaucratic, so we decided it just wasn't for us. Work-wise for me, well, generally my career has been on an upward curve. I've come a long way since those days at the Department of Health and Social Security. I gained a qualification, so I'm now a qualified accountant. Generally, my career has been on an upward trajectory, although it has had some bumps along the road. I had 6 years at Carillion. If you want to know about Carillion, come and see me later. We then had a big shock in 2011. I had my first head of internal audit role. Out of the blue, the whole department was made redundant, they closed it down. And we were heading into a decade here, starting in 2008, of things where they just didn't seem to be going quite right. There were exceptions to that. one thing I will say is, for my career, is God has always blessed me in terms of I have had at most 6 weeks out of work during all that time, going all the way back to 1984. And in 2014, I got the role as Director of Risk and Internal Audit for a company called McCarthy & Stone. We build retirement apartments. So if anybody wants a retirement apartment, come and see me afterwards and I'll see if I can do you a deal, because I might be able to do that. Job based in Bournemouth, difficult, but I spend 2 to 3 days down in Bournemouth a week, one or two nights, and it kind of worked. And then things really started to go downhill rapidly. In 2017, Beryl Hinton, Jan and Suzanne, the stalwarts of this church for many years, had become more and more reliant on everyone as her health started to deteriorate. She was admitted to hospital. And to be honest, we could all see the end coming. She used to say she was ready and wanted to go home. But in the end, it was a shock. The end came sudden. I was in Bournemouth that day, tyrant blown out on there, couldn't do anything about it, so I couldn't get back to the next day. And then would you believe, 2 weeks later, Sue, Jan's sister, suddenly out of the blue fell seriously ill with a life-threatening blood disorder we discovered. She was in isolation in Russell's Hall for 6-7 weeks over the Christmas period. A lot of prayer went up for her, and I'm pleased to say that she recovered from that, although she's still managing the condition. And some of you would have been at Sedgley Church when she told us her testimony, and it's what gave me my idea a year or so later. So we get into 2018 sort of February, March, Sue's out of hospital recovering, and we start thinking, okay, well, things may be starting to improve a little bit now, hopefully. And then May 18, one weekend, Oscar was fine. He was nearly 10. You'd think he'd got another 2 or 3 years with him. On the Monday lunchtime, he was fine. On the Monday evening, he was suddenly starting to show some signs of distress. And he couldn't lie down on the evening. We took him to the vets. They weren't sure. They were going to do a scan the next day. But to cut a long story short, in 3 days later, we had to have him put to sleep. He had multiple tumours, well advanced multiple tumours. Well, that was just another devastating blow to us. So from 2008, we'd had 10 years where we seemed to lurch from one crisis to another. And God seemed a long, long way away. Did for me anyway. As I said earlier, sometimes you don't see the big picture. And I referred to the bulletin earlier. Nevertheless, 2019 was going to be a good year, wasn't it? Cavendish House was still standing, so was our marriage. We got a new puppy, a new Cocker Spaniel. Even now she's a bit of a handful. 30-year celebration, we were going on the Queen Mary on a cruise to celebrate. We'd gone to a cruise a few years earlier. And we were going to push the boat out, dare I say. We were going to cruise via Iceland into New York onto the bridge, famous bridge there, and then fly back. And everything you were thinking was hopefully moving in the right direction. And then it all went pear-shaped, shall we say. Mid-March 2019, I noticed a lump in my right groin. I went to the GP. It's probably a hernia, she said, but let's just go for an ultrasound, check it out, make sure it's nothing nasty. I went for that ultrasound. They said, 10 days later, you should get the results. I was having lunch the same day, and the phone rang from the GP. They wanted to see me that afternoon. Well, my blood ran cold, as you can imagine. We went to see them, and they said it wasn't a hernia. One of the lymph nodes was bigger than it should be. could be lymphoma. And as many of you know, that is a form of cancer. We're going to send you for some blood tests. Now, I could have gone two ways at that point in time. I could have blamed God, gone away, or turned to Him for help and healing. I chose the latter. One of the Sundays, soon after that, I took a step of faith and came out for prayer for healing. Short while after that, I was due to go for the GP, to the GP for the visits of that blood test, not knowing what I was going to hear. I went into the bathroom in the morning, and in my head, the word normal dropped into my head. And by the time I came out of that bathroom, that word normal had repeated umpteen times. So what was that? Where did that, where did that come from? We went to the GPs, and do you know what they said? Blood's normal. It's okay. It was normal. That was going to be a good indication whether I had lymphoma or not. So I got a bit of confidence out of that. We went to see the haematology consultant. He said, I think it's 50-50 whether you've got lymphoma or not. But you're otherwise healthy. If you have, then we should be able to manage your condition. It shouldn't be too bad. But we need to have a look at that lump piece in your brain. So in June, I went for a biopsy. And I did something which I wouldn't recommend. I had it under local anaesthetic. They gave me the option, and I thought, as an internal auditor, you like to stay in control. And you like to manage the risk. So I felt like I was in a bit more control. I knew what was going on. There was no anaesthetic risks. I'll have it done. Local anaesthetic. So a guy standing next to me, who I think was monitoring all the vitals and everything, and he says, so what do you do on the weekend? He's obviously distracting my attention. And I said, I'll play a bit of golf. And it went on from there. Asked me a few more questions. About 15 minutes later, I heard the surgeon say, oh, it looks like we found one of your lost golf balls. Half an hour later, after a bit of tugging and a bit of pushing, and a bit of me going, ow, that hurt, he suddenly went, look, there it is. It was three quarters the size of a golf ball. So just imagine a golf ball, that's how big it was. And he said, looks a bit nasty. Could be just an infection, or it could be something worse. The good thing is, we've seen your scans, and it's fairly localised. So I didn't know whether to take that as a good thing or a bad thing. But it's a bit strange seeing part of your body just produced in front of you to have a look at. I'll tell you about that. And I listened very carefully when they said, count it, make sure they got all the tools out of my body before they close me up. I was going to make sure that was all right. The lump was analysed, and we went back to the lymphoma, the haematology consultant. And he said, I've got some good news. It's not lymphoma. And then he delivered a big shock. He said, we can tell from that you have testicular cancer. Well, that was a massive shock to us. There were no visible signs that you would normally get. So, okay. The CT scan, he said, also showed two slightly enlarged lymph nodes at the back of the stomach. Now, if they're less than one centimetre, I'm sorry, I'm in new centimetres, not imperial language numbers here, if you struggle with that, but 1 centimetre, he said. You've got two. One is 1.1 and one is 1.2. Well, if you think about 1 centimetre, 0.1 is like, it's like a hair's breadth, something like that. But in actual fact, 1.1 and 1.2 is between 10 and 20% bigger than they should be. So if you look at it that way, you think, okay. The good news, he said, is that the cure rates for testicular cancer are extremely high. And we googled it afterwards, 98%. Who's had testicular cancer? Does anybody know? Well, I'll tell you two who have, who might spring to mind. Lance Armstrong, the cyclist, he had testicular cancer. And he recovered it to win many Tour de France. Okay, he might have been on steroids as well, but he did recover completely. The footballer, John Hanson, it had spread to his brain. It was so bad. So if you Googled it, you would see the worst case scenario, there was still 80% chance of surviving it. Mine had spread, so I was in the brackets of sort of 93 to 95%. So I thought, I'll take those odds. But then your human side kicks in a little bit, doesn't it? 7% don't make it. What if I'm going to be one of the 7%? My haematology consultant referred me on to a urologist consultant. We Googled him. And if anybody's seen the program Embarrassing Bodies, he was the consultant. So I'd just been referred to a consultant who was on the program Embarrassing Bodies. Was somebody trying to tell me something? Actual fact, we didn't actually see him, we saw somebody else. He sent me for an ultrasound, and that ultrasound showed 4 small tumours in my left testicle. So what do? Then they're going to remove it, aren't they? Which they did, this time under general anaesthetic, I'm pleased to say, in August. And at this point, I want to just interrupt my story a little bit to say, on the door, I often ask people how they are. And virtually everybody says, yeah, I'm fine. British stiff upper lip, isn't it? Well, I'm fine, I'm okay. And then sometimes, weeks, months later, I hear a story about them being cured or recovered or so and so and so and so. Can I say, don't be afraid to tell people you're not well. How can we pray for you if you don't? If I can tell you about testicular cancer, that some people will find embarrassing. What is that you can't tell anybody else? And we can all come alongside you and pray for you. So the analysis of those 4 tumours told me something else. We went to Queen Elizabeth Hospital because they have regional specialties in that. And they said, it's unusual, it's rare, but those 4 tumours are no longer viable, they've burned themselves out. God, are they extraordinary? I think so. But of course they had done the damage. They had spread further. So we went to the curé, as I say, where they specialise in dealing with this. And do you know what they said to me? This is normally a younger man's disease. It's normally somebody in their 20s and 30s that get that. So I like to look on the positive side of things, so I was quite upbeat about that. I've got a young man's disease, not an old man's disease. But then they told me they were going to give me 3 rounds of chemotherapy. And they said, it can be pretty brutal for older men. Well, gee whiz, thanks. Even fitter ones, they said. And they said I was a fitter one. Well, that wasn't too bad. So what was I going to face? Who knows? I just didn't really know. But I did read something before I started the chemo that encouraged me. It said, don't worry, if you lose your hair, you'll get a full head of hair back in 6 months. Brilliant, I thought, I haven't had a full head of hair for 10, 15 years. We can look forward to that. It's starting to come back, it's getting there. One of the other things, Claire mentioned about me being looking quite fit. We had refurbished our house in 2015, and towards the end of 2015, Jan said, I'd quite like to put a punch bag in my garage, take out my frustration on things if we can. It developed from then. I suggested, well, why don't we split the garage in 2? One, we can store all our stuff. The other half, we can put in a treadmill and a cross trainer, which we did. And I spent quite a bit of time in there getting fit. In fact, I've never been fitter in my life. Is that a coincidence? I'm thinking that wasn't a coincidence. And God had planted that seed in my mind. So I had the operation. And to be fair, it took a little bit longer for me to get over that operation than I anticipated. And we had bought tickets. Now the golfers again will appreciate that. Everybody else would go, to what? We had bought tickets nearly a year before for something called the Solheim Cup. If you know what the Ryder Cup is, It's the women's version of the Ryder Cup, where it's team events, golfing events between Europe and the USA. And I didn't know whether I was going to be able to make this. 1 week before, I could have made it. But we walked that course over 3 days, from 8 a.m. till about 5 p.m. And 1 week previously, I couldn't have done anything like that. And then the week after that, they programmed the chemotherapy. Now that might seem nothing to you, but we had a fantastic time. And I think God's timing was in that. So, September the 20th, first round of 3 of chemo. When you get into these kinds of things, as some of you have experienced, you become obsessed with what's my next appointment, what's he going to tell me, and by numbers. There's a number that will be ingrained in my head forever, and some of you will know what it is. It's number 38. What's that you're saying? Well, again, it's a new money. It's 38 degrees centigrade. When I went in for the chemo, the sister who put the candle in my arm said, I could tell you some horror stories, she said, but I won't, and then proceeded to go on and tell me some. They give you this little red card, and because the chemo not only destroys the cancer cells, it also destroys your defense mechanisms and all the cells in your body that prevent infection taking over and sepsis. If your temperature goes over 38 degrees when you're out of hospital, then you have to ring up this number on this card, it's a red card, and they're basically telling you you have to go to A&E with 1 hour, then we meet you at the door, and they start pumping you with antibiotics because sepsis can take hold of you, and then that's it. So you start becoming very obsessed with this number 38. There was some other, just further on to that as well. The sister said, you really need to take notice of these. She said, we had one patient who had the same chemo regime, and his temperature was over 38 when he went to bed one night. He didn't wake up. And then she started telling me about the chemo. I was having 3 rounds of chemo. It was a high level, high dosage, because it works. So I was going to be an inpatient, not an outpatient as I was expecting, which was a bit of a shock. And I was going to be in for 4 days, 3 nights. And when they're putting this chemo into you, you can't leave the ward. And if they have a spillage on the ward, then the nurses all put what effectively are hazmat suits on, because this thing is so toxic, it burns. And I said, you're putting that stuff into me? So over 4 days, there are 9 bags through intravenous drip that are put through. 5 of them are the real hardcore nasty stuff, and 4 are helping ease it through. So that's what you have. Now the first night of chemo that I had, it came over me. I knew I was going to be standing here telling you about this. My eyes started sweating a bit. Do you know what I mean by that? Some ladies call that crying, but men, it's a bit of sweating. Yeah. I wasn't blubbing, but I was sweating a little bit. And for me, that was God of the extraordinary. He popped that into my head, and I knew I was going to be here. I was going to get through it. But of course, it wasn't going to be easy. Of course, it wasn't going to be easy. But the first round side effects weren't too bad. Yes, I started losing my hair after 2.5 weeks, but it didn't come out in clumps. It came out sort of gradually. It wasn't too bad. My fear was sickness. I really didn't want to be sick. I never even felt sick, let alone be sick. Bit of tiredness, no problem. The big risk the second week, because of the sepsis, is the infection. Not in our household. Jan scrubbed the place clean. Scrubbed it to an inch of its life. The biggest issue for me on that first round was my platelet count. We went back to see the consultant, and you take your bloods, like so much blood they were testing on me. And many, or some of you will know, that if you are less than 10, They want to give you a blood transfusion. My platelet count was 11. They said, come back in 2 days and we'll see how it goes. But they'd filled out the paperwork, ready to do the transfusions. I went back in 2 days. My platelet count was 54. God did the extraordinary for me. Second round of chemo treatments went quite smoothly. I had the treatment. I was 5 weeks into the 9 week period of the total 3 courses. And then I started to get discomfort in my left foot. And it came to a point where I was struggling to even bear any weight on my left foot. And we noticed some bruising on one of my toes. And I decided before Janet said it, they give you a clinical nurse advisor you can phone any time if you have any questions. And I rang him up and he said, yeah, come in. Let's just have a check of that. Now a few days previously, I had my one of two temperature spikes. At the beginning of the day, it was 37. Lunchtime, it was 37.2. Tea time, it was 37.4. 9 o'clock, it was 37.6. It was gradually edging up, everything up. When we started to take temperatures every quarter of an hour, we were getting ready to convene that number. At 9 o'clock, it peaked at 37.8 and then started dropping. I think God was involved in that. I don't know if it was a coincidence. Neither was Paul, my clinical nurse advisor, who said, come in. So we went in, they looked at it, they went, they called the consultant in, and I went, we think you might have some vascular problems here, some problems with the blood. So we went in the afternoon. I was in a hospital bed by 7:30. Now, during my time for the chemo, so another point I would like to make here, is the fact that the ward sister commented towards the end. She said, you've been very positive about this. And she said, there are some people who've come in here and they are got the chemo side effects before they even started. But for me, my glass has always been half full. If people said you can't do something, I would say, why not? So, not only half full, I think with God on your side, your glass should be fuller than that. It should be full to overflowing. But okay, we're human, so I think 75% full. And people see that. So I was admitted to hospital for a week. Because of, I knew I was going to be here, I wasn't overly worried. They said, we're going to give you a CT scan. So you can find out what's going on. 10:30, they came back and they were given an injection of heparin, and they decided they were going to do that because they were concerned that those marks on the end of my toe were micro blood clots. But it was quite good. I got my own room with a view. My own room and the air ambulance was landing on the car park just outside, so I could watch that happening. So that helped me there. But I was there for a week. I didn't expect to be, but I was there for a week. And during that time, I had another spike of temperature at 38.1, but because my blood count was up, they weren't too worried about that, so that was okay. But I was a bit of a mystery to them. They did a scan, and they said that I had blood clots in the lungs and the aortic arch. Now, I don't know how many people know much about the body, but that's two different systems in your body. You shouldn't have blood clots in your two different systems. It doesn't make sense. Do you know what they thought? They thought I got a hole in the heart. Obviously worrying. Actually, it wasn't that worrying, but I won't go into detail. I didn't have a hole in the heart. I didn't have a hole in the heart. Quite an interesting experience there. Come and see me afterwards if you want to know about that in a bit more detail. It's not appropriate from the front here. So a load of doctors had signed me off. I was then made to come home. They were going to say, you're going to be on daily heparin injections you've got to administer to yourself for a couple of months. I said, fine, that's okay, we'll do that. Into your stomach, not great, but we'll do that. And then Dr. Cautious turned up, and Jan and my dad were there, and they'll remember. He was a bit more cautious about things. He wasn't sure about whether to discharge me or not. those two, that we still don't know what more you've got in, got those blood clots either side of the two hearts. There could be some infections. At that point in time, the sister of the ward turned up and went, oh, well, I've got all this discharge notification here. I've never seen that sister before, but she turned up. And he went, yeah, okay then. Coincidence? I don't think it was a coincidence. So anyway, I believe that the blood clots was God's way of telling the doctors, that's enough, no more, he doesn't need that third round of chemo. Because what they said was, we'll keep it at two, the blood clots means it's a bit too dangerous to give a third one. We'll scan you after that, and if you've got anything left, we think pretty positive, we think it might have gone away. If we think anything left, then we can give you some radiotherapy. So fine, okay, we did that, I was in daily heparin injections. 10 days later, I went for a scan. 2 days later, I got the news that chemo had worked.
Hallelujah.
And it's that weekend after that I came and told you that, people who were here. My left foot was recovering day by day after that with the heparin injections. Still got a bit of numbness in the toe, still a bit of uncomfortable, but that's a bit of nerve damage side effect from the chemo. The blood clot damage problem has gone away. On the 10th of December, I had a consultant's appointment, and he showed me the before and the after scans. Before, you know, you can't see from where you are, but they were like that. Afterwards, they totally demolished those two lymph nodes. They had dealt with the cancer. So, the scans that I had, they also did a head scan, because I was getting some pains in my head. Had it for a week, so they did the head scan. They found nothing there. Nearly went well as yours. Pastor Dave Seals at the back, he used that a few months ago. I think he delivered it better than me then. So, what do they say now? They now say I'm in remission. They're still going to monitor me 5 years. They don't say cure, do they? Because they won't just yet. But at the moment, I'm one of the 93% who made it. And then, do you know what? He went on further than that. 2 weeks ago, my mum says, have you seen the paper about chemotherapy and testicular cancer? I hadn't. I googled it. It was on the BBC News. And it was suggesting that actually only one cycle's really needed now. My consultant didn't know about the study, even though it was actually done in conjunction with the University Hospital of Birmingham and QE. But you know who did know? God knew. So I didn't need that third one. My consultant, I call him my clot consultant. I went back on the 13th of December to see about the clots. They've moved on to tablets now. And they now say I am artificially fully anticoagulated. Anybody else has been artificially fully anticoagulated, but apparently I am. What does that mean? Well, it means I can fly. So in a week's time, we're going with Sir and Dave for a holiday for a week in the sun. We had no holiday last year. We're looking forward to that. One last thing. So I've taken on too much of your time. And just to finish off now, I want to just tell you about tithing. We've always given 10% of our income to the church. It hasn't always been easy. There was times in the early 90s when there was pressure on our finances and on our mortgage, where I thought twice about buying a can of Coke off the drinks cart in Cambridge House. 50p, that's all it was. So I thought twice about that, but we kept our tithes going. We wasn't sure whether our insurance was going to cover our holiday. And basically, we had two insurance policies, and two companies said, oh, you can only claim off the one. Obviously, that wasn't great news. We were going to lose out quite a bit. And then 2 days afterwards, they called us back and said, we've been listening to your call. You are right, you can claim off the two insurance policies. Is that a coincidence? Don't think so. I think God was involved in that. And then, I'm in health insurance at work, which happens to be helping the same people who we have part of our mortgage with, which is an endowment, and the endowments we've into that. I mean, you was never going to fully cover our mortgage. And we had another statement, another annual statement. So we'd had one in 3 months previously. That didn't make sense. So jamming through all the paperwork, And there was some critical illness cover on there. They paid out that endowment in full, and they were only going to pay out two-thirds and some. So we covered a good chunk of our mortgage. I think God blessed us for that, none of us for that. We don't do it for that. But you hear so many stories that people do get honoured for that. So to sum up, never understand why we haven't had any children and miscarriages. What was the point of that? But God became very real to me last year through my illness. God of the extraordinary, not the ordinary. Of course, the healing, he was involved in the healing. But all through the process, there was a journey of dropping things in through my head, of meeting people, of things happening, that it became very real to me. Three lines of defence. I must finish with this. I can't not say this. In my job, there's something called the three lines of defence, where businesses have management as the first line of defence. They have internal audit, which is what I do, as a second line of defence, checking to make sure things are working well. And then we have external audit, which is regulatory bodies who look at, from outside to see whether things are working properly. My first line of defence is family, and you here, friends. Family, Jan's been a rock for me. I wouldn't be here without her. My mum and dad, Sue and Dave, been fantastic. Supporting us throughout this time, travelling backwards and forwards to the curate. Friends here at church, you meant so much, the prayers, the things you've said, the encouragement. Other churches I know have prayed for me. My second line of defence has been the NHS, and I'm not going to be political, but they did a fantastic job. I couldn't have asked for more. But of course, the third line of defence is what really matters, and that's God. God's been with me throughout this and brought me through. So I want to give him all the thanks and all the praise for bringing me through this. It's not so much a story of healing, but it's a journey I've been through. Do you know, research shows that first impressions matter. Anybody who's been for a job interview knows I have to make an impression. And it says that some people, 90 seconds and people form an opinion of you. I've been on the other side and interviewed people, and it is very difficult not to form opinions very quickly. First impressions matter. And then it's difficult to change after that. How long have you given God to make an impression on your life? Have you given him 90 seconds or not? If you haven't, I'd recommend you putting aside your conclusions and your impressions and giving them a little bit longer to think about it. When I was a child, my dad used to say to me about pickled onions, which I loathe and detest and wouldn't eat one whatsoever. It's a bit of a standing joke. You never know until you try one. I never tried one. It always made me feel about sick. Why don't you give God a try? You don't know until you try. Give him a chance. You might be surprised. Thank you.